Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, August the 30th, 2001. In the Creekside room this afternoon is Marion Junghans. Today's session number is YUM 2001-2 and is titled Photography 101. Let's listen to Marion.
Well, thank you, girls, for not hurting the ladies, for not going down the ice cream shop. I mean, I have tremendous competition at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
I know, the ice cream shop is after Vespers.
Yeah, it's after Vespers also. But yeah, there's a big long line. I'll give you a clue. If you really want to get into it without staying in line, go down in the afternoon.
Oh, yeah, about 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
You just walk right up.
Yeah, you just walk right in, yeah.
We're three or four different things.
We waited last night. So we know how long the line is.
Yes, I know. It can get really
long. Right. But it was worth
when
it.
They say amen, you got to say thanks be to God and go out the door.
Yeah.
That's good ice cream.
Oh, it is. Mm-hmm. And lots of it.
Yeah. Right. Where else could you get a cone like that for 50 cents?
No, we have this Molly's we don't button. We don't make any money on that ice cream.
Oh,
no.
It was
no.
good.
You want to try that $1.25 sundae.
Oh.
They give you 5 scoops.
Oh, my goodness.
They're huge. 3 on the bottom and 2 on top.
My husband didn't eat dinner the other day. He had dish duty, so he didn't eat dinner. And that's what he had after Vespers.
What did they put it in?
They have those banana straws.
See it all melting.
Oh, yeah, no, this big, tall cone.
Yeah,
on a platter to eat it.
They have a picture in there of one of the
kids. Oh, wow, that would be an ice cream hound. Really, his best nightmare is get on a ladder and eat down a cone. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah.
Oh! I had mentioned earlier, where 2 or 3 are gathered together, I'll have a class. Even though it's small, it's okay. If you people want to move up, that's okay too. Whatever. Okay, we'll get started. If there are any more things, that's fine too. I want to make it clear that when you leave here in 2 hours, you're not going to be an Ansel Adams. I can't guarantee that at all. But I hope that when you leave here, you'll be a little bit more comfortable with how to use your camera, what you're looking at, and kind of open up your eyes to what we have around us, because that we're going to talk for about an hour, and then we're going to go out for an hour. We'll take a walk down to the bridge, and we'll look at things along the way, and we're going to sit by the river, and we're going to absorb the sound and the water and the wind and so forth, and try to become a part of the environment. Okay, so we'll talk a lot more about that a little bit later. I want to talk about cameras, first of all. You already introduced the idea that most of you have idiot cameras. And I have to admit that I also have an idiot camera, except it's very sophisticated.
Yeah.
In the early days...
Idiot savant.
Huh?
An idiot savant.
Yeah, right. In the early days, this cameras... If you were a real camera buff years ago, it was an insult to look at any kind of a camera that was automatic, because it was the process of taking the picture that was so important. And if you were showing Ansel Adams tomorrow, a wonderful film, and in it he talks about his camera, the big box thing, you put the thing over your head, and this was in the early days of camera work. And it was the meter, you know, you go around with the light meter, and your tripod, and the whole 9 yards. And they worked, in those days, they worked mostly in black and white. And, of course, as photography developed, technology developed with it, and we are to a point where we have these point-and-shoot cameras. And to a real diehard photographer, they just have a fit, because they say these are for idiots, and photography is only for those who are truly gifted. You know, it's still an art. I'm not saying it's not an art, because you will get photography that does belong in galleries, beautiful stuff like Ansel Adams. But for the most of us, these cameras have come very much available and very inexpensive, relatively speaking. Do you remember the, you don't remember, do you remember the dollar brownie?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I started out.
Right.
I don't know, maybe 50 years ago, they had a little brownie camera for a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little box thing. Mm-hmm. And we've come a long way from that. And actually, I had a camera that was semi-automatic, and it had a light meter on it, and I had a lot of stops on there that I had to do adjusting on, and I'm very afraid, and I have a terrible time with buttons and numbers and stuff, and I'm fiddling around with this thing. I have a little sign here, you know, a little tab that tells me how many feet for what stop, et cetera, et cetera. And by the time I got everything all set up, I look up and the deer is gone. The kid has run away. You know, and I was just always getting so frustrated, or the sun had set. And so when I finally got to a place where I could advance, I got this completely, it's not digital, but it's completely automatic camera. This thing will not, it flashes by itself. If you're at a wrong distance, it won't kick in. You have to back up. It almost talks to you. It does its own focusing. And so consequently, because it doesn't depend on me, I get some really sharp pictures with it. It does a wonderful job. But in the end, with all said and done about cameras, what really counts is what you see and hear, what you see and what comes out in your picture. I mean, forget all the other stuff. I mean, don't feel badly because you have a dollar brownie, if you will. It doesn't matter. It depends upon your eye and what you're seeing and how you see it. So that's what basically I'm into today, is how we see well, what we're looking at, what composes this thing. And this is kind of like baby steps. We're going to go through the composition, and this composition relates to photography. The same composition elements that I'm going to talk about relates to drawing, relates to music, relates to dance. They're all the basic things that we're talking about, except in these different disciplines. You see them through a painting, or you see them in dance, or you hear them. But basically, they're all the same. I have a discipline in both art and music. And so I constantly, when I'm out doing photography, music is running through my head that matches what I'm seeing. The rhythm, you know, and the other things that are part of it. And so I really become, you know, I really get sucked into this thing. And of course, with this, if you were with me yesterday, we talked about the right and the left brain. I go from the right brain. Most of this stuff I'm showing you today is right brain. But you get to the point where you get this down, and you pretty much, I don't know, I look at something and I don't say, well, that's the shadow, and I like this curve. And I don't really dissect it. I simply know it when I see it because I work with it so much, and I shift over to my right brain, and I photograph it if it moves me. Don't, as you were mentioning that your folks came back with all these photographs, well, as tourists we tend to do this. We take a picture of everything we see out of the bus window. We're running in and out, you know, and nothing is really, you haven't internalized anything. You're just taking pictures of things. You're taking pictures of the Eiffel Tower. You're taking pictures of the Roman Colosseum, wherever you're at. And it's simply a postcard is what you're doing. But you really haven't put yourself into it. The only way that you can put yourself into a photograph is to spend time. To go out into, here you have the opportunity to go out and sit by the river, which we're going to do. Sit under, I don't know, go hiking, go up on one of the tailings, find a shady spot, and just sit and absorb. Smell it. Feel the ground underneath you. Close your eyes. Get involved with the environment. Then you get up and you walk around, you know, and you kind of take a look at what's there, where the shadows are and so forth. And I can guarantee you that you'll get some shots that maybe nobody else will appreciate, because they're coming from you. They're your interpretation of where you're at. It's not just some building and everybody says, wow, you were there. No one will know that spot that you were in when you absorb this experience. But it means something to you. And I have files and files of pictures, photographs that only I relate to. I used to have a note card business. And here, again, I was photographing things that people would buy, things that people could around the city, you know, right from Bellingham, Washington, and we have the university there, and one of the greatest collection of outdoor sculptures in college in the United States. If you ever get to Bellingham, be sure to go to the University of Southwestern Washington University. And I have all these pictures, you know, and I have a lot of we're right on the Puget Sound, and there's the fishing boats, and there's the recreational boats and the harbor and all of that people see, and yes, they can identify with that. And that's A-okay, because I was into a little business, a little home, you know, my little cottage industry, and that was fine. Afforded me to gave me enough money to buy a few extra cameras and upgrade my skills. And then after a while, I just got tired of that. As a creative person, you really get tired of making things that other people want to see. I mean, how many postcards do you want to make? I mean, if you want to sell them, that's okay, I guess. But after a while, if you're really creative, you don't want to do that anymore. And so I moved on from that. And when I dropped my business, it was such a relief. I could now start crawling on the ground again and taking pictures of rocks and leaves and dead wood. And that's where I love to be. And so this is where I'm at. And up at Holden, it's like I died and went to heaven. Because you get all of it, you get everything here. And that's why I come back every summer, because it's getting my cup refilled. So, anything you want to ask about a camera, anything I covered so far before we get into the illness?
What kind do you have?
Oh, this is a, what is it? I always even forget. It's a,
well, it doesn't matter, but I need to buy one.
Oh, you need to buy one? Oh, it's a Minolta. It's a Minolta FL something or another, Minolta, I can't remember the, but Minolta's a good line. It's a complete, they don't come cheaply. I have a zoom lens on this, because when I go out, I can with a zoom lens, you can get fairly close ups, and you can also get, you know, bring in the, and with a big outdoors, it's really hard to get those mountains, you know, up close. So I guess I usually work with this, unless I'm in a garden or something. So, okay, let's talk a minute about, or some time. Oh, here's a manual. If you really are wanting to get into your camera, this is right up our alley, okay? Yeah. Photography for Dummies is one of those series of books, but it's put out by Kodak. It's a really good book. It just gives you everything you want to know about stops. If you want to know about stops, talks about the things that we're talking about today is also in here, plus a million other things. The bookstore handles it, and I ordered it for the bookstore. So if you are, I would appreciate if you buy it here. If you still have money left, it's $20, because they'll be stuck with this. This is a new version. I have the older one from last, from 2 years ago, but this is the most updated one. So I would suggest that you might go in there and take a look at it. There's photographs in here and all kinds of, and it's in dummy language, so you can understand it. Okay? Photography for Dummies.
We won't take that personally.
Well, I already call myself too. I am too, you know. Don't ask me anything about cameras. I know hardly anything about the bodies of cameras. Okay, I mentioned before that the elements of design are everywhere, and we're going to go through some of the basics. The first basic we're going to look at is line. Everything has a line. You have a line. Do you remember when you were in school, you used to lay down and the teacher would draw an outline of you? You looked at your shadow, and your shadow has an outline. So it really starts with even we have a line. Everything in this world has a line. It could be straight, it could be zigzag, it could be curvy, but it's a line. Your straight lines are very, very obvious in buildings, because straight lines give strength. Look at the ceiling here. Everything is straight lines, all the way across the beams, the lights. The only thing that isn't straight is the sprinkler system and the PA system in here, but there's straight lines on the walls. Everything is straight. The doors, the windows, shelves, up and down, straight. All right, in itself, a line is a line, but lines can create some really interesting shadows, like your shadow. Have you ever looked at your shadow when the sun is real high above, your shadow's real small, and the lower it gets, the bigger you get? No, no, you haven't done that in years, I know. But try it. There, the sun is out, and try it someday. Just go out and look at your shadow at noon, look at it at 10. Look how it grows. Exciting. Kids see this, and they get real excited because they're growing faster. They're taller than what they really are. It makes you feel good. All right, here we have a lot of straight lines with the building going up. Look at how the sun is shining in and how those straight lines throw shadow on the inside of the building. Not only do we have straight lines, but we have up a pair of perpendicular lines, but we have some lines that are crossed over because of the boards. And so you have an interesting crossover here, which kind of takes the monotony away from it, because this is very predictable. How, I don't know, studs are what? 16 inches apart?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so that's very predictable. We know that. We do know exactly now. Thank you. But when you get it cut up like this, all of a sudden you begin to get patterns in there, and you begin to get other shapes in there. And then how it falls across the floor. Notice the floor. The floor is horizontal lines that contrast to the perpendicular lines. So you've got lines going this way, lines going that way, some going that way, and there's movement to that. It's not static at all. And then the sunlight plays its game also within those lines. Okay? Here we have lines of it's a wagon wheel. It's a spoke with your center, and then the lines going out like this. There's also another wagon wheel behind it. Can you see that? It's kind of like a shadow, a double of what you're seeing up front, if you look really closely. Notice that the wheel not only is running out like this, but the wheel, the entire wheel isn't in the picture. And I don't think that really bothers many of us, because our eye simply follows it through. You don't always have to have everything in the picture. If you're taking a picture of a person, I wouldn't suggest cutting them in half. But when you're concentrating on one thing and you want to make a statement, and this statement was probably the hub here and how the spokes go out, it made no difference to him whether he got the whole thing in it. You got the idea. You only needed half of it. In high fashion, when you get into the ads and the drawings, you know, they do drawings for high fashion. I don't know if they do anymore, but they did that. You will only get the fur piece around the neck and just a suggestion of a face, just a suggestion of an arm. You get just the part that you want to emphasize, and the person looking at it fills it all in. You don't need to be told everything. Actually, if everything is in the picture that you want your audience to see, it becomes boring because you've told them everything. So if you can get an angle on something that's just a little bit different, whether it's an angle from up or over on the side or whatever, it adds interest to your viewer. Here we have a chain. This is a basketball. Look at the pattern that the chain makes from the sun on the backboard. And how they intersect each other and they overlap. Really, really interesting. And also this is interesting down here too. Look at this, this looks like a double, but it's not. It's simply the shadow. These are things that we don't normally look at. We just see a basketball goal. And sometimes you have to stand and watch and look and see what the sun is doing. Oftentimes when I'm on an assignment, and I do mostly outdoor photography, I don't do people or weddings. Weddings? Forget it. The mother's never beautiful enough in the beautiful photographs. Oh, you got the wrong side of my face. You know, I would never do what I've done when I don't like them. But anyway, you can make money. But anyway, what I do when I'm on an outdoor assignment is I'll go and visit the place first without my camera. And I'll wander around, whether it's a park or whatever. I'll wander around and I'll sit down under a tree. And like I said, I'll just kind of absorb it. Then the next time around, the next day, I'll go in the morning and I'll see where the sun is. I kind of know what interests me, what really moves me. And then I'll hang around all day and see how the sun affects it in the morning. And then at noontime, where the sun is at and how the shadows fall. And then the evening. And the third time, I take my camera. Hopefully the sun is out all 3 days. And then by the third time, I know how the shadows are playing on this thing. I have internalized it, and I am part of my picture. Now that is, you know, that's pretty heavy. And for most of us who are just shooting from the hip, we'll never get into that kind of thing. But if you truly want to do a study, oftentimes I've done my shooting in the morning and at noon and at night. And then I make a collage out of the three different, and it looks like three different places because the shadows are so different and the colors change. So, okay. Here is a leaf, a very predictable leaf. You see the veins in it? But what has happened to that leaf? It's more than just a regular leaf. Something has grilled its way through the center of it. Mm-hmm. Obviously some bug or something has eaten it all the way through. That gives an interest. Otherwise, it would simply be a leaf is a leaf. If it's a perfect leaf, I guess it's okay. But my kind of leaf, I love when, in the fall, when the fungi has gotten to the leaves as they dry, pick up a leaf. They're almost lacy. The veins are still there, but they're almost lacy. And then they have all these mottled pieces in there where that the chlorophyll is only half gone. And I think right about now when you take a walk, when the leaves start to turn, there are some alders up here whose leaves are turning. Pick up a leaf. Look at it. Hold it up to the light. There's all kinds of lines in there that are really, really interesting. Same way with wood. As you go up to 10 Mile Falls, there's a lot of land slide areas where a lot of the trees are knocked down every year because of avalanches. A lot of broken limbs. A lot of wood sticking up like this. And take a look at those lines. Take a look inside. See what's happening inside, how those bugs have eaten it away. All kinds of wonderful things. You know, there's so many things in this world that you can't photograph because either you're not there or it's raining and it's not a good time to take a picture. And I've just come to the conclusion that I can't take a picture of everything. I take a picture of it in my head. You know, it's just like going shopping. You go to a gift shop and there's a all kinds of beautiful things that are imported, but do I have to own them? You know, I don't have to take a picture of everything, and I have to teach myself that because I'm an addict. I stopped carrying my camera in my trunk, and I've been free of that. Okay, so these are lines. Oh, look at this. Look how this line goes around, and it isn't complete at all, but it certainly doesn't affect the eye any. You finish it up. And here is a repeat. I really don't quite, this crease is the crease of the paper, but there's yet another leaf that was next to it, and it repeats what you have here, but it's only half there, because it's an interesting dialogue between the two. Okay, lines is everywhere to see, to use, and to enjoy. Then the lines also create space. We already saw some of that on the other side. Space is just anything that's between you and where you're looking. All right, let's talk about our horizontal space here. The farther away you look, your eye can see the fuzzier it gets. Just simply, and the camera is the same way. The farther away it is, the fuzzier it gets. Here actually is so far away, we have over here on the horizon, we have what? What is that?
A cow.
Yeah, there was a herd of cows. Mm-hmm. What that one cow is doing up front, I don't know, but see, he's closer to you. Mm-hmm. All right, the photographer saw this. Maybe he has ring around the collar and nobody wanted to associate with him. But anyway, he's up in front. And the photographer took the opportunity to use him to give you a sense of space because he's closer and these cows are further away. So you have some sense of how farther away they are. You knock that cow out and you don't have any reference point. Also interesting is that he brought the forefront up here by giving a little bit of of weeds in the front, which puts you into the picture where you're standing. He gives you a fence, which is right next to the weeds, and then he takes you off into the distance. All right, so if you are shooting, like when you get out into the woods, you're shooting, just say you're shooting dumbbell or one of the mountains around here. It's A-okay just to shoot up and just get the mountain itself. But if you want a distance, to show distance, try to get a little bit of ground level, just at the very bottom. You don't take up much room, but just to get the person, just to get that space down at the bottom. And then I like to frame in at least one side with a possible, there's nothing here, with a possible tree limb or something on the side, just sticking in a little bit to help give you that distance, and then shoot out. Now, the stuff close to you will probably be fuzzy, because if your focus is on the mountain, but that's okay if it's fuzzy. It still gives that reference point and it anchors it down. Okay? Here is the same element here of more of a grass, and I believe that this probably was taken on I-5 going down to California. And here we have the ground level. We have the water. The next level that we see is an old pier. Those are the pilings, that dark, okay? That's the next spatial thing that you see. And then beyond that, you have, look how that range of trees and mountains is getting fuzzier. And as you go back even farther, look how fuzzy it is. You can hardly make out what is it? Way back there.
Like a skyline.
Yeah, it's a skyline. Could be San Francisco. But you get here, he has all these depths of distances that he's shown in one shot. See here, 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 and here, and here, and here. Another sense of depth is by the vanishing point. I was always intrigued as a kid with this vanishing point. I never understood it, because I figured when we're on a trip, you know, I was waiting, I could see the road go to a point, and I was scared to death that we would hit something at the end or fall off the earth, because, you know, where are you going to go when the road ends? Well, the road never ended. It just kept expanding as you go out. And, of course, as you get older, you realize what this phenomena is. It goes, your parallel lines just go to a point. And here is a wonderful example of this. From the floor, from the sides, from the ceiling. Everything goes down to the vanishing point of these doors. The interesting part about this, that thing that draws you into it, is that you want to walk down here and go through those doors. You ask yourself, what's behind the doors? It could be anything. It could be a garden. It could be this a CEO's office. It could be almost anything.
To be honest with you, I kind of want to take a right there. It looks like we have a coffee
shop. Really? All right, there's a Starbucks there. That's right. There is a Starbucks there. You're absolutely right.
I'll meet you outside.
You're from Seattle in the area.
No, new to the area. So I'm still in the Starbucks place.
Mount Vernon will do, Anacortes will do, Bellingham will do, yes.
You can't fall down here without landing inside a Starbucks.
Yeah, right. You're the first one to say that, and that's interesting because there is one there. Right. Space can be created by just a very tiny, tiny crevice. We have a lot of trees here that have cracks like this, either through disease or lightning has struck it. And with the shadow in there, it gives it roundness, it gives it a depth. You don't really know how deep it is. I don't suggest sticking your hand in there, because I'm scared to death. I'm afraid something will bite me or, you know, someone out of my hole. But it doesn't take much of a cut like this to make a shadow, which adds interest to your tree. It molds it. You have a shadow on the side of it, and you even have some more of this. All right, so take a look and see how many of these you can find on your walk. Notice how it's so fuzzy in the back, because this was the focal point. Okay. Interesting, it's been gouged out down here too, and there's a nice shadow in there. Nice shadow. You know, we go for two trips every summer up to Heart Lake. One is for fishing, and the other one is for a photograph. The first time we go up, I please my husband and we go fishing, and I leave my camera at home. The second time, he takes his fishing pole, but I take my camera. It takes us three times longer to get up there because I'm always stopping taking pictures. And he fishes for about 20 minutes, and it's time to come back. But that's the agreement. That's how we keep our marriage going. We compromise with two trips up there because he keeps yelling at me, "Marion, stop being so slow, you know? But I got to crawl in here and get this shot, you know?" So so when you go out, don't go with anybody who hikes really fast or anybody who wants to go fishing and has to get there by noon. Don't do that because you're going to get really frustrated. All right. Here's a shot of one of my own photographs, which I should have had made larger. I'm from Bellingham, and we're right on the Puget Sound, and a lot of ships come in. We have Georgia Pacific, which is a paper plant, and they have a lot of sawdust that is brought in. So anyway, this barge came in, they unloaded the sawdust, and it was interesting the way it poured down this way, and it poured down this way, and it formed a V. And as I looked at it, I was out on a boat when I took it. I didn't see all the nuances of everything until after I had it printed. But I saw, gosh, this was direct sunlight. This is almost the same distance from me, but yet this threw a shadow on that, and it started doing all kinds of wonderful things with color. And I had my V come together over on the side. I purposely set it over on the side. Don't take pictures with a tree smack in the middle. Set it over a little bit on either side so that it's off balance, so that it catches the imagination, and it isn't so predictable. You have, a right. If you're taking a picture of your grandchildren, say, and you have five people, well, you want to get them all together. Well, try, first of all, get rid of the garbage cans. Watch what you're doing. Watch the environment, and that has happened more than once. Look around and move your group if you need to. Watch out for trees. Don't let trees grow out of somebody's head, which is oftentimes happens. Move them over. Have group them so that maybe two or three of them are standing up and one or two are kneeling or sitting down. Get a nice group and get it a little bit off just so you get everybody in there. But have it a little bit off, and maybe if you have part of a tree on one side. I mean, plan it. Shooting from the hip is one thing, but you have to be able to have eyes to see what you're doing. Otherwise, you get stuff that comes in that, it's all fuzzy and can't even tell what it is, and it's not very interesting. And I know that your scrapbooks are full of stuff like that. I know, because everybody shoots that way. It all has to be balanced. Walk into a living room sometime. Davenport, table, lamp, chair, door. Window. Everything is symmetrical. How many homes do you really walk into where they have conversation groups? Not very many, because we're trained to be that way. Orderly, it's easier to clean or whatever, and we just haven't educated ourselves to anything other than our regular left brain eye, which is practical, and not the right brain, which tells us, well, let's be a little creative with this. Okay, an interesting part about this, too, is that you have lines coming down like this, and then this is where the trolley is. There's a little cart that's a belt that takes this, and it picks it up, and these little cars run over to the factory and dumps it. And so we have this nice line here, these lines going up, taking your eye up, and you look here, your eye goes up, and then across, and who knows where it goes? Okay, any questions about space? I thought I confused you. Oh, my, that's a lot to read.
I didn't know. I didn't bring my pen.
No,
I
said,
I forgot my pen.
Space also creates pattern. You see how all these are interconnected? You start out with line, and then you get space, and then space creates patterns. Our life is full of patterns. Our wallpaper at home is full of repeated patterns over and over and over and over again. We don't need wallpaper as much as we used to back 40, 50 years ago. And the patterns were always exactly the same pattern each time. Okay? But here, this pattern, these patterns are quite interesting. The giraffe definitely has a pattern, but it's not predictable pattern. The reason that it makes it a pattern is because it has the same component. It's the same spot, if you will, a little bit different in shape, but it's the repeated of that. And notice how it changes its shape. Down by the ankle, it's very, very small. And then as it goes up the giraffe, the spots get larger and larger and larger because the body gets larger. Isn't that interesting? And so we have a lot, it creates a pattern. But like I say, it's not exactly all the same shape, and that really makes it interesting. Have you ever just looked at a giraffe from the rear end? I haven't. Pretty interesting.
Well, I've never gotten that close to him.
Yeah, well, he probably had a telephoto and he was about 30 miles away. Here we have a very predictable pattern. Your cactus, which is repeated over and over and over again. But the thing that makes it interesting is the play of light. Each one of these has a little different highlight. These are called highlights. That's where the top of the light is. That's where the most light is. And because the highlight is not quite, see, there's more light here than there, and this is darker because it's getting less light, and obviously the ones at the top are getting the most light, and the ones at the bottom are getting less light, which creates more of a shadow. And so we have a gradation of shadow all the way down, which makes it really interesting. And the thing that catches my eye are those little spokes, those spikes on there. That's the thing. It's not smooth. And you know cactus are not smooth. You ever sat on one or felt one? Oh, bad news. Yeah.
I like it.
Does anybody know what this bottom one is? Can you tell me? Can you identify the material?
Well, I can read it.
No, you can read it, but it's not hard. No, all it says is tree bark often creates random patterns with shapes and shadows. It doesn't tell you what tree it's from.
Oh, here's what you want to know, the tree.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Okay, you want to hang on to this and I'll show you. I'll pass this around. Take a piece out of it. Pass it on down. Take a piece.
Oh, cool. And this is the way it comes.
Yeah. It's cool. It's a tree that we've got here at Holden.
Really?
Yeah. And it's...
Potato chip?
Have a piece of bark. You're just in time. It's a ponderosa pine. And you can see quite a few of them coming up on the bus. There's also a couple of trees right as you go to 10 Mile Creek Falls, right before the benches. And they're on the left-hand side. And every year they get new bark. And all of these pieces just simply fall off of this thing and just around the base of the tree. And they're wonderful if you do collages. You know, they look like puzzle pieces. If you do collages or whatever, but not all, I guess what we're trying to say is not all patterns are repeated exactly the same way. This giraffe certainly doesn't have the same pattern repeated the same way. This probably doesn't either because the higher up you get, the new growth you get, so these are smaller, so those patterns are, this certainly is very irregular, very irregular. And here is another pattern that I saw on the shoreline. Our city do logging. It's not so much anymore, but the logs would be corralled in with what do you call those things that keep the logs in so they don't float out?
Tugboats?
No, not tugboats. No, they're like white. They're like lines that they have. It's a barricade so that they can't float out. So when the tide comes in, all of these logs are like piled together like a pile of puppies. You know, they're all pushed in. Well, you can see they formed the rhythm of the tide. To make room, they simply all moved together and made this wonderful rhythm. See, it forms a zigzag pattern. Mm-hmm. And of course, when the tide changes, then they move around and do other things. All right, not only did that interest me, but there was also a surprise, an element of surprise in this picture. Can you identify it? Just not the lines.
A boat?
No.
Is there? I can't.
What are those little white spots?
Yeah, that's what I wonder about.
They're birds. Yeah, they're seagulls. They're seagulls sitting on top of these. Look at this.
I was going to say seagulls.
Yeah, I know. Seagulls?
Sure.
The zigzag would be pretty predictable, except those seagulls are sitting on there. And all of a sudden, it just gives it a whole new depth. See, these are the things that so often we're not attuned to. We don't see that. And I probably never would have taken a picture of those logs if those seagulls hadn't been there. Because it gives me not only an element of surprise, but it's they're white in contrast with the dark logs and the blue water. Nice contrast. Okay, let's move on to rhythm. I mentioned before that a lot of times when I'm out with my camera, I hear music if it goes with what I'm doing, you know. And I hear regular rhythm, I hear staccato rhythm, and whatever, and we'll take a look at some of this rhythm. Rhythm is, let's see, it says it's caused by repeated lines, shapes, colors, or values. And the same way with music. Rhythm has, is anybody here in music? Do you read music or play music? Well, there's a way, you know, there's the lines and the notes that jump all over, and they have different tones and different values. And there's always the time measurement at the front, if it's two beats to a measure or three beats or whatever. And so it distinguishes the rhythm, whether it's short, long, or whatever, whether it's two beats to a measure or four. Well, here is, I look at this, and there's all kinds of rhythm in this, and you don't have to know anything about music to recognize it. See, first of all, let's take a look at the tense. You see that rhythm is repeated over and over and over and over, kind of like a lullaby that you sing to your baby, and pretty soon everybody falls asleep, including you. You know, it's very predictable, it's very soft, it's very rhythmic. That's the way that I see it. Now, there are other people I've had in class who see a different thing, but you may interpret it differently, too. But here you have the rhythm, and to me, these are like the ends of each measure. This is the bar, and then it keeps going. And look at this diminishing point. See how that works? See how the fence just goes back and just gets smaller and smaller and smaller? So you have this sense of it coming out towards you. Okay? Now look at the lines. First of all, look at these lines. Very straight lines. They're kind of like in a violin, if you're playing a big, long, you know, or maybe your bass viol is playing some really long notes. These are very long, and this is going da-da, and this bass is going da-da-da. I mean, just follow my antics, okay? And then you have, these are all going down, okay? Then you have an opposite melody coming across. We might even call that a counterpoint. It's something that is going opposite, and you have a nice contrast between, visually you have a nice contrast, and if you're thinking of it musically, you also have a nice counterpoint. It's something that goes, you have a melody going here and a counterpoint comes in, and it really is the same melody, but it might be in a different key, and it counters it. And you have a nice, it all comes out in the same key at the end, but it creates a lot of movement. And this in itself creates a lot of movement. Here, this house again follows the long lines of the boards. As I look at this, I wonder who ever lives in this house. Neat house. I don't know if they designed it that way. I'd like to live in it. Do you see the bricks? Mm-hmm. Nice little corner. as far as a photograph is concerned, it gives you a little bit of relief from all of that. It brings you down to your baseline again, okay, and you can see yourself walking along there. And that in itself has its own rhythm and its own pattern. Here is a very regular pattern, one that is predictable. And if you've been to Rome or, you know, even Washington, D.C. or any one of our capitals, it's all Roman architecture. And it's all basically a lot like this, very strong, repeated over and over, very predictable. And if you were to walk around to the back of this building, it would look just like the front. Okay, that's regular rhythm. That's regular, it's predictable, and it's just very, I don't know, you don't feel threatened at all. You know, you feel very safe in these buildings. And that's what the government, at government buildings, are designed like that. There's supposed to be stability there, you know, and predictability and protection and so forth.
I didn't realize.
It's interesting to see what they've done. The photographer has caught not only the regular lines, but look at the parking lot. I mean, isn't that strange that he would put the parking lot in there? But look at the lines in the parking lot. They're not very predictable. I mean, there are spaces there, but the lines are so different from the building itself. So he has a contrast.
Interesting.
Isn't that interesting? This is along I-5 also. This is a wayside park, and this is where the winds really blow. They come in really, really strong. And so they built this kind of like a buttress or a fortress here so that the wind hits these things. And in between, there are picnic tables. It looks about like the last place you'd ever want to stop. And there's restrooms and so forth. But you see how strong those lines are. And that's irregular, too, because you can't even, although it's built, I don't know, I think that, I'm not sure about this. I think it's all built in a regular, what one column does between the other is the same, but it's the play of the light that makes it so irregular. And then the photographer, in order to give you a relief of all that regularity, look at the driveway or the walkway. All of a sudden you have this nice round curve coming up to it. And it takes you right into the picture, and you walk right up to it and in it. See, so you have a nice contrast here, around compared to the straight. So you have a nice contrast. And it takes your eye into it. If you can't get your viewer to get into it, then it's just nothing but blah. It's just there. It's just there. You have to be able to get into it in some way. This we call, it's staccato. Any of you have ever, and I know that you've been in marinas, and with two boats that are parked, and when the wind blows, they all bob up and down at different times, and their masts all clink. Clink, 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 staccato. There's no rhythm to it at all. That's the way these things fall. These things fall in a staccato fashion. They don't all fall at once. Someone pushes a button and they all fall. They just fall down, you know, at random. Pine cones fall the same way. And so you get some real interesting staccato rhythms in our walk. We'll see some of that staccato. And just the very way that it falls, just naturally, is beautiful. One falls on top of the other or whatever. And so this is very staccato, just the sound of it. You can just, I hear it. And of course it's also staccato because there's no two ships alike. No two boats alike. No two masts alike. No two people alike. No two skippers alike. Okay. Anyway, let's move on to texture. Texture is cool. Kids really tune into texture. If you heard my class yesterday, we talked about how babies are all right-brained.
They don't have language. Right language comes with the left hemisphere. And everything is texture to them. They feel everything. They put it in their mouth. They chew it. They taste it. They spit it out. Whatever. And if it doesn't feel good in their mouth, you can't get food down them if it doesn't feel right. So texture surrounds us. And if you're tactile, it's a wonderful world, especially up here. Can anybody identify what this might be? This is a tough one. There's a lot of texture in here, but can you identify what it might be? If you were a contractor, you probably would recognize it. They've taken this, it's a cement form. They poured the cement into a form, and then they've taken the wood away, and this is what's left. Obviously, it's not, maybe it's a basement or something, or they haven't sanded it off. But look at all the different stuff you get in there. I mean, it looks like someone painted it. You have, it looks like a knot and some things sticking out here. It looks like that might be
a little spike
wire. Yeah, interesting. It's just interesting texture. I'm sure that you've seen pictures, real close-ups of, say, what is this? When you're a kid, what is this? You know, and you're trying to figure out what is it. You have about two pieces of information, and you're supposed to guess what it is. We all are familiar with this, that texture, which is what? What's this?
Snow, right?
Yeah. And what makes the texture? Tire tracks.
Oh, okay.
Hello. Have you ever walked in snow?
I have
been on this spot.
You're from Arizona. I know you don't see snow. You're trying to see something else into it.
I'm not a cancer.
Well, you know, if you take time to look at the bottom of your shoes, if you have tennis shoes or walking shoes, they all
I noticed that walking on the trail yesterday, because Rick always walks in front of me.
Yeah,
the trail up to Monkey Bear Falls was kind of dusty. Uh-huh. And I was noticing the pattern, because we met a forester on the way back from his trail.
Uh-huh.
I noticed
I always have my kids, when I taught art, I would always have them take off their shoes and draw the bottom. First of all, we do a rubbing of the shoe, the bottom. Neat. You get all kinds of neat designs. And then they would actually draw it, too. And there were no two shoes alike. I don't know who works for Nike, but he's pretty creative. Never makes two shoes the same. Here we have a beach scene where there's a piece of driftwood and this seaweed gets pulled in with the tide. It gets stuck on the wood. The tide pulls back and the seaweed hangs there and dries. And then the next tide comes in and does the same thing. It just keeps piling up and piling up. And so you have the stringy seaweed here, okay? The brown seaweed. In the back is the piece of driftwood, which is white because it's been beached for so long and sun-bleached. Then at the bottom here is your baseline, and what do you have? A lot of neat rocks.
Shells.
Yeah, shells and rocks or whatever, but they're beach rocks. And so you have 1, 2, 3, at least 4 different textures in that one picture. And I'm a real tactile person. I don't like paint. I don't like painting. I do sculpture, I do weaving, anything I get my hands into or onto, but I don't like brushes because they don't give me, I don't know, it just doesn't satisfy my tactile urge. And so I'm really tactile. This is one of my shots.
You do finger painting.
I love it, except when you do that's the funnest part. And then here we are back to our cactus again. Texture like crazy, and because of all the shadow, it's quite deep. Those needles are quite long, and the light goes down into it and really gives us a lot of depth and a lot of texture on the top. And we're back to our tree. Back to our tree. Trees are very tactile. Go up to a tree as soon as you get the opportunity. I mean, look at it not as a tree, but take some pictures of just a section of the tree. See where the shadows are falling and see if you can get some good patterns in there, and then shoot it. You might see little bugs in there. I mean, this is home for 100 different things. you know, it's just not a tree. And if you haven't hugged a tree, you don't know a tree. Some of these trees you can't get your arms around. But just lay under one, hug it, touch it, you know, and then get into it. And here particularly when you find the tree up there, go around the base, pick up a few of these and take pictures of the bark and sit there on that bench for a while and look at it. It's really neat. Because only until you really absorb what you're looking at can you get any kind of interpretation. Otherwise, we're just shooting postcards. Okay, unity. It all has to kind of tie together. You say, wow, how does that happen? Well, pattern can tie it together, such as this. Look at the skyscraper. You see the patterns in the windows? They're repeated over and over and over. But like the giraffe, they're not all exactly the same. The windows are bigger at the bottom and smaller at the top. Now, we know that isn't true. But how has the photographer made that happen? What has he done?
The angle at which
he's the angle. And what angle do you think he's at?
The ground.
Yeah, he's probably laying on the ground, shooting up. And the higher it gets, the smaller it gets. So he's got that going for him, okay? Now, you notice it goes right up, and your eye goes right up, and it goes right up into the sky. And you say, wow, you know, I'm up and out. He found another building next door that was, I'm not sure exactly how that goes, but again, it's an opposite kind of pattern, but it's doing the same thing. It's going up like this. Then, that in itself would be pretty predictable. But he's found something, he's done something, he's waited until he's gotten a nice shadow. So there's a shadow that's being cast exactly across that those buildings, but what is in the shadow?
A sculpture.
What do you think that might be?
It looks like a sculpture.
Yeah, it's a sculpture of some kind. And he only gets the tips of it. I mean, it's not enough to take away the message of what he wants to say. So it's just enough of an introduction just to make a little bit of difference so that there's a contrast. See? I mean, that's tremendously different shape than this. So that kind of relieves your eye from all this stereotype stuff. Pretty interesting.
I like that tree picture.
Which one?
The tree.
Mm-hmm. All right, can you... The tree has unity. You know what makes the unity in that tree?
The center part of it?
Yeah, right. It's the trunk. It's mother trunk that holds all those branches together. And that's unity. Kind of like if you want to think about your family, probably grandma and grandpa are the trunk of the family. They're the core of the family. And then you have all these branches coming out. That's why they make family trees. That's where family trees come from. Yeah, and each one of these branches is an offspring of this original tree, which came over from Europe some years ago, whatever. That's right. And even though there's very complex, there's a lot of branches and a lot of stuff going on, there's still unity because you all come back to the trunk. Okay, another piece of unity we have here is a copper sculpture. It's from a Canadian sculpture. And it's, I'm assuming, I've not seen the full piece. I think it's a relief. It's flat, and as on the wall. This looks like a bird, and the wings come down and probably fold up down in here. Now there's unity to this because you can see just by showing the one wing, you can see how it's folding in like mother, you know, this is the main figure here, and the lines are coming in and giving us a very unified feeling. And all of this in between is probably done with a nail and nail head and a hammer. And you can pound and make texture out of copper or any tin or anything else like that. So there's unity. We talked a lot about unity. Here's unity here, too. Let me see if this is the one that... Yeah. I shot this. Again, it's unity. All of these logs are huddled together like puppies in a puddle or something. And yet, just as I shot that picture, something happened, and I didn't realize I got it until I had it developed. Do you see the water?
The water there.
Look at the water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A seal popped his nose up. just as I shot the picture. So sometimes you get surprise elements. Isn't that neat? And that's such a difference between, because you get the long circular pattern going against these straight poles. Neat. Didn't stick around long, but I got it. Disunity. We talk about unity. This is disunity. Every city has this. It's the strip that you hit when you come into town with Burger King, McDonald's, Dairy Queen.
Okay, I'm going to have to ask you to stop there, please. We had rice for lunch.
What did you have for lunch?
Rice. We had rice. So.
I did too. Okay. Anyway, you get all these fast food places, okay? And they're all one piled on top of the other. There's been no design at all as far as landscaping. The signs are all overlapping, all trying to get your attention. There's telephone wires. There's electric lines. Everything is all screwed up, and that's disunity. When there is, you can't make any sense out of it. And every time I come to a city, I just extremely dislike this section. In fact, I would have to be starving before I ever stopped to eat, because I'm real visual, and these things really upset me a lot. I'm from Northern Indiana, and from Valparaiso, and oftentimes I'll go back. And the only way I can get there is to fly from Seattle to Chicago. And that's one of these honky-tonk towns that you can't get to in any way. So I have to take a bus. And as the bus goes through Gary, and if you are familiar with Gary, Indiana, it still is a steel mill town, and it's almost 100% black, and all in blight. I mean, there's very, very poor people that live there. And the whole town is like this. The minute I hit the city limits of Gary, I slide down in my seat and I close my eyes and I take a nap for the next half hour.
You're not driving at this point, are you?
I'm in a bus.
Oh, okay.
I'm in a bus now. And the bus goes through this. Oh, okay. And so I simply close my eyes until we get through it, because it just really upsets me. Because I know Gary, and at one time Gary was not like that. But it's really disintegrated down to some really, you know, poor neighborhoods. And anyway, there's just so much of this blight around. And this is okay to shoot something like this if you want to show the ghetto, you want to show the plight of poor people, even the migrant workers, you know, who are living in poverty. You can get puddles of water with oil on them, you know, and cans laying around. That's all very appropriate if you're wanting to tell a photo essay. And if that's what you want, then this is what you would be looking for. Yeah. All right. Okay, we're almost at the end here. Okay. Let me ask, why are you taking the picture? Why are you taking the picture? What's your emphasis? You got to have a reason for shooting it. Something caught your eye. All right. Where is the emphasis? Where is the emphasis here? What is the emphasis? Maybe it's not just one thing. What is the emphasis in this picture? It's simple.
It's the baskets.
Yeah. And he made sure that he blacked out the background. I don't know how he did it, but the black background is dark. So the emphasis is on the baskets. And look at how he's even given depth to these baskets through some lighting. I don't know whether he had artificial lighting, but shown it up here, and then the ones in the back were a little bit darker. You know, so you have
down this, into the basket.
Yeah, and looking down into the basket. So the basket here is the emphasis. What is the emphasis here in these dolls?
Babies.
Which one?
The one lying down, I think.
Yeah, I think probably so, because it's so irregular. All the rest of them are sitting up, and you're going to ask yourself, wow, what's that doll doing laying down? You know, got a broken arm, got the kid throw him away, or she didn't want to play with him anymore? Well, you know, it kind of catches your imagination. Mm-hmm.
The one that stands out the most, though, is the one on the right.
Yeah, because why?
Because of the light.
Yes, and it's...
And close.
And it's larger.
Yeah.
Right. And so you get a depth here, too, don't you? And at the same time, look what the photographer has done. He's taken this, and your eye follows the body, and it goes right up to that head in the back. Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. What's the emphasis here?
Words. The graffiti.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? What's the message?
It's a philosophical expression.
All right, you're cheating.
I should take one of those.
Yes, it's graffiti. And someone is angry about something. And so you find it on walls, you find it in bathrooms. In fact, graffiti has been studied. There is an art to graffiti. And they've written books about the messages that have appeared in graffiti in different areas. They say different things. It's anger and it's frustration coming out from people who have no other voice but to write on a wall or railroad cars, you've seen that, or on a wall. And so this definitely, this is the emphasis. It's a philosophical expression, okay? What the emphasis here is achieved by just a very simple background. This is something that you even could find around here at Holden. Just a piece, it's a tag on there, especially if you go up to the village, the old Pioneer Village. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of stuff up there that has, they're very, very simple. And it gives you the message of what? Well, life in the past, there was something here, it's gone now, but it was here. And so you're giving the message that, yes, there was a living life here at one time, but that tag or tag tells you it's gone, finished. And one last one, here is my ship, this is my prize. Again, I was in a ship, I was out in the harbor, and this huge ship was coming by. And I saw this anchor, this beautiful rusty anchor, and I saw it up against the black of the ship, and I wanted to get a picture of it so badly. And of course we were moving and the other ship was moving in the opposite direction, so how do I time this thing? By accident, you know, I'm just waiting and waiting and waiting until it gets close enough that I can shoot it. And I shot it, and my gosh, what happened? I not only got the anchor, the light was just right. I got also, this came out, which I didn't see at the time, it's the water marking. And then, look at that. I got that reference point between the shore and the ship. It was right at the, what do you call it? Is that the hull? The hull's the back, the front? You know why, as little as I do about
ships. Yeah, I can't help you.
Anyway, it's right at the front. Anyway, it was just one of those marvelous shots. And it had to be done in a split second. If I would have waited another second, I wouldn't have.
Oh, that's fantastic. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
And one last word about color. Ansel Adams did very little work in color. And black and white is very difficult. It's a lot difficult than color. Color can turn us on. It turns me on. American flags are my thing. I have a whole collection of American flag shots. Yeah, they're flowing. I mean, this was taken off Lady of the Lake. You know, they're rippling. They have different. They have movement to them. You know, and it's symbolic. I'm from the World War II era. You know, and I'm very patriotic. You know, it just has a real message for me, and I have a whole collection of these. But also, color can turn. You know, I mentioned to you before about the water and the oil. I mean, there's reflections in here. You can get all kinds of abstract things going on with color. Color is beautiful, but don't let color dominate your picture. I mean, just don't take it because there's a lot of color in it. Try to make sure that you have some composition in it. Because color can be kind of a cheating way, but people say, oh, that's beautiful, but it really isn't a very good photograph. It doesn't really say anything other than it snaps you in out of color. So be careful of that.
I have a friend that takes pictures and then writes poetry to go with them, and she only wants black and white.
Uh-huh. She doesn't want to be distracted by color. She wants to create her own color through words.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
Well, we're going to spend the next 45 minutes, we'll take a walk off. Hang around with me, because as we go out the door and on down, I'll have a lot to talk about what we're seeing, and try to open up your eyes to some of the things that you've not seen along this road or seen down at the river. So bring your cameras. Take a picture of whatever talks to you, whatever speaks to you. Just don't take a picture because I say there's a good shadow there. If it doesn't speak to you, don't bother. Okay?
To get any with my throwaway cameras.
I have to get a new one.
But I have one of those you throw,
disposable cameras.
Well, why not use it?
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah,
you can take some cookies.
It doesn't make sense. Okay, I'll wait out the door. Listen, use it. Those throwaway cameras are A-okay.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
My camera went on the blimp, so I'm using them, and actually,
you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised with good quality, fairly good quality, for what it is.